Okay, today we're learning Nida Daf Nun. We're going to start at the very bottom of Mem Tet Amud Bet. Kol kasher ladun kasher lahaid v'yesh kasher lahaid v'eino kasher ladun. We're continuing in the list of Mishnayot that have the same structure, where one thing necessarily means we have the other, but if the you have the second item, it doesn't necessarily mean you have the first. It's like the Mishnayot in Megillah, Ein Bein, Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni, except for this. Ein Bein, right? And then there's a whole list of a lot of other things, likewise here. So the one we're up to right now is, if you're kasher ladun, you can be a judge, you for sure can testify. Although we'll see in a minute, maybe not. But right, it seems obvious. If you can be a judge, you can also testify. But there are some people who can testify, and yet they can't be judges. So if you look at Tosfot on the next page, at the top of Nun Amud Aleph, it really belongs on this page. But he asks a good question about this, which he says, Itema hare isha dekshera ladun. But women can testify, can be judges. How do we know women can be judges? So Dvorah was a shofetet. So how could you say, here's a good example, someone who can be a judge and yet can't be a witness? So he suggests a few possible answers. The first one's the most interesting. He says, V'yesh lamar, if you skip down a few lines, maybe it's only talking about within men. Okay, so within men, if you're kasher lehaid, you're not necessarily kasher if you're kasher ladun, you for sure can testify. Whereas if we were talking about women, it wouldn't necessarily be the case. What's so interesting about that is that opens the possibility that women could actually be judges. However, his other answers clearly go in the other direction, which is inami nihibi nidon havi isha bichlal mikoma koma dayanim ein isha bichlal. Okay, really, women can't be judges. So how do you explain Dvorah? Dvorah haytadana al pia dibur. She had ruach hakodesh. You know, God was with her. She was kind of a conduit. Inami lo haytadana ela melamedet lehem dinim. She was a teacher. She was teaching halachot to the people, but she wasn't actually judging the people. Okay, that's another answer. And then he quotes in the Yerushalmi, they have a whole bunch of different psukim that people bring to show that isha is psula ladun. Okay, that a woman can't be a dayan, and they prove from psukim. But definitely the first answer leaves open the possibility that maybe women could actually be judges based on Dvorah. Okay, so now getting back to our line, there are people who can testify but can't judge. Who are those people? Someone is blind in one eye, he can't be a judge, but he can be a witness. Umane, and who does this go according to? Rabbi Meir. We're going to see this isn't everyone's opinion. Some people think that a summa be'echad me'einav could actually be. We're not actually going to see that opinion explicitly, but they're going to say this is only Rabbi Meir. D'tanya. Haya Rabbi Meir omer. So Rabbi Meir would say, here's a braita. Ma tamud lomar al pihem yeh kori v'chol nega. Okay, so here's a pasuk. It says, according to the judges will be every reeve, every argument, and every nega. Now nega is leprosy. Why are we connecting these two things? The context of this is in the Egla Arufa Psukim. So what's the connection of Rivim and Nigaim? Makish Rivim Linikaim. So now we're now going to have a Hekesh. We're going to compare the two. What's true for one is true for the other. First, we're going to start with what we learn from Nigaim. Ma Nigaim Bayom. Nigaim, you can only, the Kohen, how does a Nega work? It's not just you have some disease or leprosy, but the Kohen has to determine that your mark is a leprous mark. So we can only do that during the day. How do we know? Dichtiv u'bayom hera'ot bo. Okay, that's the pasuk by leprosy. And therefore we learn it's only during the day. So we're going to make a hekesh now to the rivim. Ach rivim bayom. Also, dinim, right, the judgments can only happen during the day. U'ma nigaim shelo besuma. Just like nigaim can't be with a person who's blind in one eye. How do we know this? Notice it says, to the eyes of the Kohanim. That means he has to have two eyes to be able to see it, and therefore, af rivim shelo besuma. So that was the part of the braita that's relevant for our purposes, that if you're blind in one eye, we can't have you be a dayan. I was thinking that there's a connection between the yom and the seeing in two eyes, because the day was always perceived as that's when there's light and you can see, and at nighttime, you can't see. Even Abaye has the statement that you're not allowed to, you shouldn't eat at night because you can't see your food. Okay, the light, they didn't have good lighting. And if they had candles, the people who could afford it, and there's all those in the beginning of Bracha where it talks about when the Ani would eat his bread, which would be early in the evening because before it got dark in his house. So I was thinking they both seem to indicate that your vision is partially impaired, either by the lack of light or by not having one eye. And why, it's obviously very important for a judge to be able to have sight to vision so that he can read the cues, the way people are speaking, whether they're telling the truth or not. A lot is based on what you can see. So you can tell whether what they're saying is they're actually being honest or not. So that's the brayta that was important for our purposes. But since we're already in the brayta, we'll now do the hekesh in the reverse direction. Umakish negaim lerivim. Now we're going to learn from judgment to leprosy. Ma rivim shelo bekrovim. Just like a judge can't judge someone who he's related to, af negaim shelo bekrovim. Also, leprous marks can't be ruled by a kohen who's a relative. So now they say, well, if you're going to learn all the way, let's learn even more things. Well, judges, you can only judge people with a minimum of three. Maybe you need three kohanim to determine a leprous mark. Vidinhu, and even that, not only that, but it's besides we have a hekesh, it's also logical. If financially, right, when it comes to your money, we're going to need three people, all the more so when it comes to something on your body, right? Your body is much more important than than your money. So therefore, wouldn't you think that? Tamud lamar, v'huva la'arona kohen o alechami banav ha-kohanim. It says in the pasuk, they bring the person who has leprosy to Aharon or HaKohen, or to one of his sons, which seems to be very clear. Ha'lamadita shafilu kohen echa ro'et ha-negaim. You only need one kohen. So if you just had the hekesh, and logic, we would have said three. However, the pasuk seems to indicate not. So now, this was all to say that our Mishnah, who says, Yesh kasher la'i ve'no kasher la'dun, is coming to exclude a summa ve'echa me'enav, and we learned it out from Nigaim, and it's according to Rabbi Meir. Now we're going to have a situation. Hahu samya de'hava b'shivavuta de'Rabbi Yochanan. There was a person who was blind in one eye who lived in the community of Rabbi Yochanan. Now remember, Rabbi Yochanan, I don't know if you remember this, but the Gemara started off with Rabbi Yochanan, who was the one who said, our Mishnah means a summa be'echa me'enav can't be a judge. So now there was this summa in the community of Rabbi Yochanan, de'hava kadayandina. He was a judge. V'lo ka'amar le v'lo midi. Nobody stopped him at all. Okay? Strange, right? Hechi avid hachi. How could they have done that? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan, doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say, halacha kistam mishnah? We know that Rabbi Yochanan holds in many places, we paskin like a stam mishnah. Now our mishnah is a stam mishnah, which means what's a stam mishnah? There's no argument, right? And it's not said in anyone's name in particular. And we generally hold like a stam mishnah, utznan. And what does our mishnah say? Kol kasher ladun kasher lahayiv, yesh kasher lahayiv, ein kasher ladun. And then they asked, not only did our Mishnah say it, but then they said, Latuye mai, what does it come to include? Rabbi Yochanan, Latuye suma be'echa me'enav. So how could it possibly be that Rabbi Yochanan himself explained our Stam Mishnah as saying that a suma be'echa me'enav can't be a judge, and yet he let this judge in his community? So what did they answer? Rabbi Yochanan Stam Achrina Eshkach, he found a different Stam Mishnah that seems to go against our Mishnah. Now, it doesn't exactly go against our Mishnah. However, it goes against Rabbi Meir, who held, right, this is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says, you can do Dinei Mamonot during the day, and if you started them during the day, you can finish them at night. That seems to go against Rabbi Meir, who said, we learn from Nigaim that it can't be at night, and what else did he say? Well, that it can't be assumed by Chame Enav. So therefore, we can assume that he was holding by this other Mishnah, and this other Mishnah would also disagree about the issue of the Summa by Chame Enav. So now they ask the obvious question, which is, Mayum Dehai Stama Mehai Stama, why did he choose that Stam Mishnah over this Stam Mishnah? Right? Now, you could have answered, right, maybe he doesn't really hold by that Stam Mishnah, but he didn't, once this person was doing it, right, you can say, let it go. Right? He didn't want to make a big stink about it. Sometimes it's better not to start stirring up problems as long as they have someone to rely on. But the Gemara made it seem like Rabbi Yochanan must have supported this. So, Ibaitem Astama de Rabim Adif. Remember, who said this? Rabbi Meir said this, which means the assumption is he's an individual who said this, but it must be the rabbis must have disagreed with him, even though we don't see that explicitly. We see it in the Mishnah there. So the Mishnah must have been the rabbis. So, Yachid v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim. V'Bayit Ema, here's another interesting answer. Mishum dekatani legabe hilchata dedayne. Look at the context. The context of our Mishnah is in the midst of a bunch of random Mishnayot that were put together because they were strung together because they had the same structure. That Mishnah is in Sanhedrin, where the whole topic is judges and witnesses, etc. So since there it's in its natural context, we're going to say that must be halacha lamaaseh. And here, it was just some mishnah that was strung together, but we don't really paskin this way. Maybe it was just put here because it had the same structure, but not necessarily because we paskin that way. Okay, moving on to a new mishnah, another topic. Kol shechaya b'maaskot metamei tumat ochlin. V'yesh metamei tumat ochlin ve'eno chaya b'maaskot. Okay, we have food that one needs to take masrot from. Okay, from Betorah, it's dagan, tirosh, and yitzhar, right? It's grains, grapes, right? Wine products and olive oil, you know, come from olives. Midarabanan, they kind of stretched it, right? They extended it to all sorts of other fruits and vegetables. So here it's saying anything that's chayav masrot is also going to be considered food that it can become susceptible to impurities. Remember, food and drink is right, you know, rishon and a rishon. They can all be metame food and drink. It can even be, right, if it's truma, it could be a shlishi. Kochim, it could be a rabi. So anyway, all those that are chayav masrot are metame tumat ochlin. V'yesh metame tumat ochlin, but there are things that are considered food for purposes of tumat ochlin, ve'eno chayav masrot. So obviously the Gemara is going to ask, Latuya Mai, what are we talking about? Latuya basar v'dagim u'beitzim. Okay, meat and fish and eggs. Okay, first of all, basar, there's a bit of an issue. Basar kodshim could become tamei. Okay. I'm sorry. No. That's what it is. Sorry, my mistake. Basar, right, can become tamei, but isn't chayav in masro. Right, the question with the basar was the other. Some people say, what do you mean? There's maser behema. Okay, but they say, oh, we're not talking about maser like that. We're talking about maser for food purposes. Maser behemah isn't a food-related issue. Maser behemah is you have to bring one-tenth of your animals to be sacrificed, but that's something else. That's not the same. The other thing I was thinking, there's another answer, which is masrot, you're only chayav at a later stage, right? When we first pick them, they're not yet chayav in masrot. So also then you could say it's already considered food, but it's already food for purposes of tumah, but it's not yet masrot. The Gemara could have answered that, but instead they kind of took food categories of food items that don't have chiyuv masrot because they don't grow from the ground, but they are considered food for tumat ochlin. Okay, next mishnah. Kol shechayav b'peah, chayav b'masrot, v'yesh shechayav b'masrot, v'eino chayav b'peah. Peah is leaving over a 60th of your field, and masrot is, right, taking from each type of vegetable once, you know, at a later stage. So now we're going to talk about things that are chayav b'masrot and yet are not chayav b'peah. So the Gemara says, latuye mai, same structure. Latuye te'ena v'yerek. Okay, so now we're going to learn that she'eno chayav b'peah. Te'enim, figs, and vegetables are not chayav b'peah, right? This sounds radical. Vegetables aren't chayav b'peah. Right, what would you think? A field, right? So we're going to learn the vegetables were not chayav and pe'ah. Okay, when we think about it, it's more grains and things like that. We'll see why vegetables are not chayav and pe'ah, although we'll see there's some exceptions to the rule. Titnan, klal amru b'pe'ah. Okay, here comes the mission. It explains that when it comes to pe'ah, there have to be certain criteria. Koshu ochel, it has to be food. Vinishmar, something that is protected. In a minute, we'll see what this comes to exclude each category. It grows from the ground. The crops, you bring in all the crops at once. Okay, it's not something that grows and every day a few more grow and every day a few more grow and you're picking all the time. And it has to be something that you leave for the long term. This is going to exclude yirakot that basically rot quickly. Right, they don't last for a long time. So all those are chayavim b'peah. So now let's go through. Ochel lemiute svichei satim b'kotza. This is to exclude these wild things that grow, which are, they were used for dye and not for food purposes. Vinishmar lemiute hefker. Okay, it has to be something you protect and not something that if you say my whole field is hefker, anyone who wants can come and take. Well, then you're not chayavim b'peah anymore. V'gidulom an aretz lemiute k'mehim u'pitriot. These are mushrooms and truffles that grow wild, right? Well, not that grow wild even necessarily, but they don't get sustenance from the ground, right? They're fungi. The likitato ke'echa lemi'ute te'ena. Here comes our te'ena. Okay, figs don't grow all at once. Okay, they grow gradually. They become ripe gradually. Umachniso lekiyum lemi'ute yerek. Okay, vegetables don't stay for the long term. Now they're going to say that onions and garlic and things like that are excluded. We're talking about vegetables that would rot quicker. V'ilu gabei maaser, now here we go, that was for pe'ah. How do we know that these are chayav maaser? T'nan, now remember, I just want to remind you, this is all, when it comes to pe'ah, we're talking on a do'oraita level, right? And these are out of the klal of do'oraita chiyuv of pe'ah. Now, we said, and not only that, but the rabbis weren't gozer on them either. When it comes to maser, only daganti rosh and yitzhar chayav mi do'oraita, but the rabbis kind of said everything else is going to be included midrabbanan. And then they included even these categories that weren't included in pe'ah do'oraita. Okay, when it came to pe'ah, since only these two categories were excluded, the rabbis didn't see a reason to say, oh, well, let's include them midrabbanan. When it came to truma masra, where very few were included do'oraita, and then they included everything, so they were more inclusive about it. So now we'll see tnan. Koshu ochal v'nishmaru gidulo min ha'aretz chayav b'masraot. So notice what's missing. Ilu l'kitato ke'echad u'machniso l'kiyum lo katane. Okay, they're not mentioned here. And therefore, you see there's the difference. V'mayu b'hem shumim u'psalim chayavim. But if, and that's what I said before, we'll get back to, if it were onions and garlics, and I assume anything that will last long term, then your chayav, how do we know this? Ditnan malbeino b'tsalim sheben hayerek. If you have rows of onions, and you have a row of onions, a row of a vegetable, let's say onions, cucumbers, onions, cucumbers, onions, cucumbers. Now, normally, what do you do with pe'ah? You leave a small portion of your field, the 60th of your field on the side. But here you have a field that's partially, right? Every other row is chayav in pe'ah, and every other row is not. So what do you do? Rabbi Yossi Omer, pe'ah mikol echat ve'echat. He says you have to leave a corner of each row. That's each row of onions, you leave a separate corner, not one corner for all of them. Chachamim amrim me'achat al hakol. No, you can take one row, leave a 60th, right? Count a 60th of the entire, all the betzalim that you have, and leave it all from one place. So there's a machloket about it. In any case, the point that we see here is, if you had shum and batzal, you would be chayav in pe'ah. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, olshin shezav'an mitchila lebehema, v'nimlach alehen la'adam. Okay, these are endive roots that people would grow that really, okay, they're very bitter. Right? We eat endives, but I assume this is a type of endive that people didn't really eat. And you planted them really for animal purposes, for animals to eat. Now, if you have something ra'oi for an animal, that's not going to be metame tum and ochlim because it's not considered food, because it's food for animals. So what if you first planted them for behema, v'nimlach alehen la'adam, and then you thought you're going to use it for people to eat. Srichot machshava lechishe yitlishu. Okay, you need, okay, now we're switching back to tumah. Okay, they kind of switch back very quickly without really telling us that they were switching topics. But in order for it to be considered a food item that can be metame tumat ochlin, you have to have machshava. Okay, machshava, this goes back to, we had a big debate about machshava with pigul, if you remember. Do you have to actually say it in words, or is it enough to think in your head? And there's also machloket here. It's machshava mean. You have to say I'm going to eat it, or is it enough just to think it? But when is it important, according to the Gemara, to do the machshava? It has to be once they're picked. If they're in the ground and you think I'm going to eat them, that doesn't count. Meaning that if you then pick them and you don't have that machshava, they're not going to be considered tumat ochlin. Kasavar, okay, now they can't become susceptible to tumah. Kasavar, it must be he holds, okay, because he said this, right, this is Rabbi Barbachana said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, so now they say it must be that he holds machshevet chibor lo shma machshava. Okay, having a thought about an item that's attached to the ground that's not considered machshava. It has to be detached. Amar Rava, Rava says, af ananami tanina. We can also learn this from the following Mishnah. First Mishnah in Taharot, Yugimot Varim Ne'emru B'Nevelat Of Tahor V'Zeh Achad Mehem. There's 13 things said about the Nevelat Of Tahor. Let's just review what a Nevelat Of Tahor is. It's a bird that's a kosher bird that died, not because you shechted it. It died on its own, or died in some way. And while it's in, remember, it has the unique type of tumah. It's not metame if somebody touches it. But while it's in your mouth, while it's in your throat, you become an avatuma, basically. So anything you touch becomes tameh, including people. So there's 13 things about nevelat of tahor. This is one of them. Sricha machshava ve'einat sricha hechsher. It needs to have machshava. Now, what does it mean, machshava? Well, when the bird was alive, you could have planned on eating it. It was a kosher bird. So therefore, we're going to compare. Okay, now they're doing a comparison. An item attached to the ground is like a bird that's alive. Okay, it makes sense, right? Because it's attached to the ground. It's kind of got sustenance coming into it. It's like a bird that's alive. So now, when the bird was alive, it wasn't enough to have machshava when the bird was alive. Neve Ladov Tahor, generally people don't eat. So therefore, it needs machshava that you're going to plan to eat it if you're going to make it tameh. And, right, if it's going to become susceptible to tumah. Ve'ena tzricha hechsher. However, it doesn't need hechsher lekabel tumah. Okay, meaning liquid doesn't need to come upon it. Normally, you have to have liquid come upon something in order for it to be susceptible to tumah. We'll get back to that in a minute. Why not? Or actually, maybe they don't say it. Okay, maybe I'll explain it. I don't think they say it in the Gemara explicitly. It's because of this concept. If you remember, we learned this a long time ago. Sofo lavo lidei tumah chamura. Anything that eventually will be able to become a high-level tumah, which is this nevei ladov tahor, when it's in your throat, it has the status of an avatuma. Right, it turns you into an avatuma. So therefore, since eventually the hechsher, the kabel tuma, is basically giving something significance. But if something's going to be so significant in and of itself, it doesn't even need hechsher. So that's why this nevei ladov tahor doesn't need hechsher. But the purposes, for our purposes, the important part is it needs machshava. So what do you see from this? Ama machshava chayim lo shmei machshava. So from here we learn that thinking about something when it's alive or likewise attached to the ground wouldn't do anything. Okay, and that's his proof. So Rava says, I can prove, Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan really holds machshava chibur lo shmei machshava. I can give support to him from this Mishnah. So hachanami, right, therefore we'd say the same thing, machshava chibur lo shmei machshava. Rabbi Zera Amar, Rabbi Zera says, what are you talking about? Hacha, you could say that that Mishnah was gozal shenafal min arumas kinan. It was a bird that came out of the sky. In other words, you never saw this bird before. That's why if you could have had machshevet when it was still alive, it's just you didn't. You could say that the Mishnah was talking about a case when it needs machshava, the bird, is when you never saw the bird until it came falling from the sky dead. Okay? Delo hava kaman, it wasn't in front of you. Delichsho vale, was never before you. So Amarle Abaye, Abaye is now going to disprove this rejection of Rabbi Zeira from a case that happened. Tarnagolet Shabiyavne, Mai Kalamemar. According to what you're saying, what about this Tarnagolet that was in Yavne? That the rabbis, what happened was there was this Tarnagolet in Yavne that died. It was in Nevelat of Tahor. And they had this machshava about it that they were going to give it to the Kutim that lived there. And that already made it, right? That was the machshava. And the machshava was after the bird was already dead. And it seems like it wasn't a bird that fell out of the sky, although this, we're going to see that it wasn't not so clear where this bird came from and when and whether they did see it before or they didn't see it before. But Abai is going to assume right now that they must have seen it before. So what are we going to say about that case? So Amarle said to him, Tarnagol Barahava. He was a wild bird that just appeared out of nowhere. So now they say, Achichu Ale, Tarnagol Bara of Tamehu. They say, wait a minute. You can't say that bird was a wild bird. If it was a wild bird, wild birds aren't kosher. So they kind of made fun of him, okay? In other words, they answered Abaye by saying, Tarnagol Bara, and then they laughed at that answer and said, what kind of crazy answer is that? If it was a wild bird, it's not even kosher. And the bird in Yavne was Nevelat of Tahor. So what kind of a ridiculous answer is that? Amar lehu Abaye. So Abaye says to them, okay, they were making fun of Rabbi Zeira. Gavra Rabba Amar Milta lo tachichu alei. He says, don't mock his answer, right? He's a very important rabbi. You have to be careful how you respond when you think an answer is ridiculous. You have to be careful how you respond. And then he explains what he meant by a tarnagol bara. He didn't mean a wild bird that's a type of bird that's not kosher. What he meant was tarnagolet shemarda. It was a tarnagolet that rebelled and ran away. It was a kosher bird, ran off, gave birth to these chicks, and then one of the birds came back, the gozalim, because remember it was a gozal, right, we were talking about a gozal, the gozal, right, they were talking about the gozal, so they're saying it came from this tarnagolet shemarda. So if that's the case, umay bara, why did they call it a wild? It wasn't really wild. De'ivra mimara, that it came from, right, the translation of this is it, one second, became wild from its mother. In other words, it became like a desert because the mother ran off, and then it came from there, meaning it came from the outside, okay? And not that it was a wild type, but in fact, it was a kosher bird, and that answers the question, okay? And that was all to say, okay, let's go back to where we were. We tried to, Rava said, we can prove it from this case of the Mishnah, right, that it needs machshava, about machshava chayim. Rabbi Zeira said, oh no, you could say that bird came out of nowhere. Right? So then they ask, what about the Tarnagolet Shebiyavneh? So they say, oh no, the Tarnagolet Shebiyavneh, really they never saw before. And this is all to disprove the proof from the Mishnah, that it could be that a bird could have machshava, right? You could have had machshava during its life. These cases, there just wasn't an opportunity because the birds came from out of nowhere, basically. Rav Papa is going to give another option. Amar Tarnagolata de'ag mahafa. It was a Tarnagolet from a marsh where also there were no people around. Rav Papa l'tame, he goes l'shitato, d'amar Rav Papa. Now we're going to see there's a debate about a Tarnagolet who comes from the marsh, whether it's a type of bird that lives in the marshes. Is it a kosher bird or not? So Rav Papa says, Tarnagol da'agma asur, Tarnagolata da'agma sharia. Okay, there's a difference between the male and female. It's interesting that you could have a species that the male is not kosher and the female is kosher. And that's because the simanim that you need, if you remember this, these simanim you need for a bird, they're found on the female species and not on the male. So he thinks there's a difference. The simanech, and how do you remember this? This is cute. Amoni velo amonit. Remember, you could take a convert, an amonit convert, but not an amoni. So you could take the female version, but not the male version. Darash Maremar, this is the opposite opinion. Tarnagolata da'agma asira. Okay, if she is actually not permitted. Chazua Rabbanan didarsa va'achla, v'hainu giruta. This is called the giruta bird. Why is, even though she has all the simanim, if you remember, this goes back to Chulin, that it can have all these simanim, but even if it has all the simanim, but it's a bird that's a prey type bird. Okay, there's all different explanations about what a darsa is. Either it puts its feet down while it eats the other, or it attacks. There's different ways of explaining what a darsa is, but they said they saw that this bird is considered a doreset, and therefore it attacks its prey in some way. And therefore, even though it has all the simanim, it's not actually a kosher bird. So Rav Papa, again, was explaining this case must be that kind of bird where, again, it came from out of nowhere. Nobody saw it before, and that's why, and again, this is all disproving the proof about the Mishnah. That the Mishnah can't prove that you couldn't have had machshava about the bird when the bird was still alive. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to quote another Braita. We're going to say maybe there's a machloket about the machshava by Nevelat of Tahor. Okay, we're going to see a machloket here. Gozal shanafal lagat v'chishev alav lahaluto lekuti tamei. If there was a gozal that fell into this wine press, and then they thought, oh, let's take it out to give it to a kuti. Again, the question is, did they say it or did they just think it? Whichever one it is, depending on what you hold by. But they wanted to take it out to give it to a kuti to eat. Again, we're talking about nevela, so Jews can't eat it. But they were going to give it to a kuti. It's tameh. It can become susceptible to tumah because, again, what did we do? We took this food that no one was planning to eat, and we said, ah, now we're going to use it as food. Lekelev, but if you're going to give it to your dog, tahor. Then it can't become susceptible to impurity because that's feeding to animals. That doesn't cause something to be considered food. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri omer, af lakelev tamei. He says, no, even if you think you're going to feed it to animals, then it's tamei. Okay, it can become susceptible to impurity. So now, where does he get this from? Right, because in general, we generally say it has to be used for food for human beings. So where does he get even for a dog? Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, kal v'chomer. Okay, it's logical. Im mitame tuma chamura shelo b'machshava. Okay, if you put this in your mouth without intent. Now, here's a bit of a debate, a bit of a confusion here. This whole thing in Nevelat of Tahor, what happens when it's in your throat? You can be mitame all sorts of things, right? Now, this becomes tuma chamura when it's in your throat. Even if you didn't have machshava to eat it. Now, first of all, what's it doing in your throat if you're not planning to eat it? But I think the idea is, first of all, someone could have shoved it down your throat and you would have been tame even that. Okay? So we can explain it that way. Okay, there's Rashi said, one second, where is it? Right. Rashi says, Kigon ha'ochla metame begadim bebeit ha'bliya, va'afilu loch, right, afilu loch hashav alav, even if he didn't intend it, kegon shelo yadash zehu. Not sure exactly what Rashi means, shelo yadash zehu. Maybe he didn't know it was nevelat of tahor. He didn't even know that that's what was going in his mouth. He would still be mitame at that point. So now, since tuma chamura, shelo b'machshava, it's mitame tuma chamura even without machshava. Okay, not clear what exactly machshava is here. But lo yitame tuma kula, tuma kala, shelo b'machshava. So shouldn't you say the same nevelat of tahor if it has such power to be mitame even without machshava, this tuma chamura, for sure it should be able to become tameh. Okay, you have to be, we're talking about two different things. One is, while it's in your throat, it's going to be metameh. That's the tumah chamura. But our whole question is, forget about it being in your mouth, is this considered food that if a person who is tameh, let's say, touches it, would he make it tameh? Okay? Would it become tameh tuma ochlin, which is tuma kala? So all the more so, it should be metameh tuma kala without machshava. Okay, since it has this high level status, or could become a high level status, shouldn't it be able to be metameh tuma kala without machshava? So amru lo. They said, no, not really. Imamar, I don't agree with your argument, they said. Imamar tabetuma chamura shekein ena yoredet lekach. Okay, it's not so clear what this means. The Gemara, we're going to actually wait for tomorrow to get to what the Gemara actually means on this. But we'll have to see what they, how they explain this. They're going to explain it later. But by tuma chamura, it's not yoredet lekach. It doesn't go down into that. We'll see what that is later. Tomar betuma kala shekein yoredet lekach. Okay, so they basically have an answer, which we're going to have to understand later what it means. Okay, that there's something about tuma kala that is more chamur, so to speak, than the tuma chamur, or different. So Amar Lahem, so he says back to them, Tarnagolet shebiyavne tochiach, sheyoredet lachkach vitimua shalo b'machshava. So now they say, he says, but look, okay, there clearly was this case of this Tarnagolet shebiyavne, and nobody knew exactly what had happened in this situation. Because last time we brought it, we said, the Tarnagolet shebiyavne, right, they had a machshava to give it to the kutim after it was already dead. But now he seems to be saying that the Tarnagolet shebiyavne, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, there was no machshava in the Tarnagolet shebiyavne, and they basically said it became tameh even without there being machshava for anyone to eat it. Amru lo, misham ra'ayah, so they answer him exactly that. You can't prove anything from this Tarnagolet shebiyavne because kutim ayusham b'cheshvu aleha la'achila. He said, that case had kutim there and they were planning to eat it, so don't say there wasn't any machshava with this Tarnagolet shebiyavne. Right, you wonder why this case was so famous. Everybody knew about it. This is Tarnagolet that happened. But you can see there was a bit of a debate about the pratim, right? He thought there wasn't machshava, and they said, what do you mean? There were kutim there, and they were planning to eat it, and therefore they obviously had intent for it to become food, and that's why it became tameh. Okay, so now they ask the question, b'may askinan, what exactly is the case of this machloket of the gozal shenafal l'toch hagat? Okay, what's the case that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim are disagreeing about? So now they say, Ilema bikrachim lama lamachshava. If you're going to say, we're talking about in the big cities, you don't even need machshava. Okay, the whole thing is, this is all based on societal norms. Did people eat this food or did people not eat this food? Now, we say, well, it's nevelat of tahor, right? We can't eat it. It's not kosher. But the question is, would other people eat it, or people who aren't careful, or non-Jewish people? Was it something that people ate or not? So now we're going to have different categories, and it depends on where you live. Would people eat something like this? Kind of like, it's disgusting. It just kind of died on its own. Would somebody really want to eat that? So doesn't it say in the Mishnah? Okay, so ilema bikrachim, if you're talking about in a big city, you lama lemachshava, you don't even need machshava. Okay, so again, what's the case? The gozal falls into a gat. I'm just going back to the braita. He falls into this wine press. Someone wants, right, they think, I'm going to give it to a kuti. So according to Tanakama, only if they're going to give it to a kuti, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, even if they're going to give it to a dog, it can have tumat ochlin. So now they say, if it's in a city, you don't even need machshava. Forget machshava for a dog or for a person. You don't need machshava at all. The hatnan, doesn't it say in the Mishnah, Nevelat of, this is a mission in Uktzin. Nevelat behemat tahora. Okay, now we're moving on to animals. If you have a kosher animal that died, bechol makom, okay, this is anywhere, in the city or in a village, everybody eats, you know, people do eat nevelat behemat tahora. Unevelat of tahor, vahachelev, bakrachim ein srichim lo machshava velo hechsher. Okay, in the krach, in the big city, it doesn't need machshava, it doesn't need hechsher. Why? Because in the big city, there's a lot of people, and people need food, and there's not enough food to get around, and people even eat nevela of tahor. Okay? Therefore, since it gets eaten, it's considered, without machshava, you don't need any intent, it's considered food. Ela bikfarim, so now you're going to say, okay, so maybe in the villages, where basically, what's the story in the villages? There's much fewer people right now. You could make a counter argument, but because there's fewer people, there's enough meat to go around, and nobody's eating Okay, they might eat nevela of a behema, but nobody's eating a nevela of a bird, right? A dead bird. That's what I said. You can make a counter argument, but there's supply and demand. There's not enough, but obviously they're talking about what, or at least they're assuming what it might have been in their day. But if you're talking about in the village, is there anyone who says that you don't need machshava? In other words, everybody thinks you need machshava. V'hatnan, nevela behemat me'a b'chol makom, u'nevela ov tawor b'krachim, tzricha machshava. Okay, nevela of a behemat me'a. Okay, now this is interesting. This is very interesting because what's it saying? A kosher dead animal, okay, even though we're focusing on the birds, I just want to explain this first part. A kosher dead animal, the assumption is people will eat. A non-kosher dead animal, the assumption is people won't eat it. Even if it's an animal that people normally eat, if it died on its own, even for non-Jews, that's considered disgusting, like a pig. Their assumption here is that people wouldn't eat a pig that just died on its own. Okay, that's the assumption here. I don't know why they make that assumption, but they make that assumption. So in Ebele, Ebeimat, Me'at, anywhere, big city, small town, small village, doesn't matter. And Nevelat of Tahor Bakfarim, Tzricha Machshava Ve'ena Tzricha Hechsher. So it seems like everybody thinks it needs, which means it wouldn't be a source of debate. So, and this was a debate in the Braita. So Amar Rabbi Zeira, Zeira Bar Chanina, La'olam Bikrach, really we're talking about in the small villages, where we said really it doesn't, right, in the big city. It's in a big city where people do eat it, but what's the issue here? So if people eat it, it shouldn't need machshava, so why is there a machloket here? Gito ma'asto va'asa ato kikfar. What do they say? Because it fell into the wine press, it's disgusting now, and nobody wants to eat it. So it's like, even though it was in a city, it becomes like the krach. And that's why they debate. In other words, do we say yitom asto and it's like a krach, in which case it needs machshava, or do we say not? Okay, so that's the debate in the Braita. They then have to say it must be talking about in a big city, but it kind of has this in-between law because it fell into the gut, and that's why it now became disgusting, and that's why there's an issue about what kind of machshava does it need. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow we're going to pick up from this line that we still didn't explain about what does it mean about tuma yoledet or lo yoledet, ena yoledet, and what are they referring to. We'll pick up with that tomorrow.